Oh, it's coming down the tracks, baby. Happy Thursday morning. It's great to be here on KCMO Talk Radio. And yesterday was a big win for states' rights. And you heard it break right here on the Chris DeGaulle Show, who, of course, is on from 10 to noon every day on KCMO Talk Radio. So the Kansas Supreme Court upheld the Republican legislature's congressional redistricting map. This is a big deal. This means now that Wyandotte County will essentially be split between the 2nd and the 3rd congressional district. So no longer is everyone in Wyandotte County part of the 3rd district, which right now is being represented, of course, by Sharice Davids. You now have a 3rd district in Kansas represented by Sharice Davids as she runs for re-election this year. That will be the southern half of Wyandotte County, essentially. All of Johnson, all of Miami, all of Franklin, and all of Anderson counties. So to those of you in most of Miami County who are not part of the 3rd District, and to our friends in Franklin and Anderson County, how about we welcome them into the 3rd District? Hey, welcome on in, boys and girls, theys and thems. You're part of the party now here in the 3rd District. Well done. And, you know, this is something that obviously has been up in the air for several weeks because we knew this was going to happen, right? We knew that no matter what kind of congressional map was drawn by the Republican legislature in Topeka, we knew that it was going to be appealed.
Objection.
Yes, exactly right, John. No matter what, it was going to happen. There was going to be Democrat money, leftist money that was going to try to get this map overturned. Now, remember why this is happening. This is happening because every 10 years after the census, you have to redraw your congressional maps based on population shifts. So here in Kansas, obviously, Johnson County is absolutely blown up the last decade. You could not keep the old 3rd district in place. Let's start there. I know many of you are familiar with this whole process, but, we always have new listeners coming in. I don't want to assume a process that is fairly complex is understood by everybody, so we're going to hit the reset button on it here. But when you redo the census every 10 years, you have to then redraw your congressional lines. So you have to do it, by the way, at the state level. So you have to do it for your state senators and your state house reps. But the things that get most of the attention is how you redraw your maps for your U.S. Congress seats. So Kansas has 4 seats in the Congress. Those maps have to represent the exact same population around the state. So we know, and this is par for the course around the country, places like Western Kansas, much of rural America, has shrunk over the past 10 years. Suburban areas have mostly grown over the past 10 years. Johnson County has exploded over the last decade, right? So you've got to shift these maps to make them essentially the exact same in population. So what they did is they took Lawrence, Kansas, and they put it in the big 1st district that encapsulates most of Western Kansas because they need more population there. In the 3rd district, they took the northern half of Wyandotte County, moved it into the 2nd district, which is held by Jake LaTurner. And then the 3rd district became, as I just noted, southern half of Wyandotte, Johnson, Miami, Franklin, Anderson counties. And then the 3rd district is down in Wichita, Ron Estes, and that really didn't get a lot of attention because there was not a lot of drama down there in terms of how that map was drawn or how that district was drawn. But all the attention was here on the 3rd district because we were told that it was somehow, you know the word, racist to split up Wyandotte County. Why? I don't know. The county's 60% white. I mean, yes, it's more minority than other counties, but the idea that it was breaking up a majority-minority county is just not accurate. It's not. It was just the usual political nonsense. It was trying to find anything they could to accuse the Republican legislature of drawing somehow a racist map or something like that was not going to work out in their favor. And you know what? They had a sympathetic judge in Wyandotte County who then kicked it to the Kansas Supreme Court. But the Kansas Supreme Court reversed the lower court decision. And they ruled that the congressional map that was drawn is legal under the Kansas Constitution. So now you've got this map that, by the way, all this talk about gerrymandering, which was the word that got used a lot, it was always difficult to allege a gerrymandered map to get rid of Sharice Davids. When this new map, she would have won in 2020. Sharice Davids would have won re-election in 2020 based on the numbers under this current map that is now going to be in place. She would have gotten re-elected. So if that's gerrymandering, if that's a real strong attempt at simply gerrymandering by Kansas Republicans, they suck at it.
Fail.
Yes, exactly right. They bombed that thing out. All right, if that was truly their attempt at gerrymandering, they gave her a district that she would have won. So now, here's what the conversation is going to be. Sharice Davids cannot win, or Sharice Davids getting screwed by the Republicans. Sharice Davids got screwed by one group and one group only. That's her own Democratic Party. All right, if the old 3rd District was still in play this year, which was Wyandotte, Johnson, and a sliver of Miami, she would have had a very difficult time winning re-election again here in 2022. In fact, I think she would have been an underdog under the old map to Amanda Atkins. Now, she has a massive uphill climb. I admit the district obviously does shift more Republican than it was under the old map. I don't deny that. That's a fact. But if you want to understand why Sharice Davids may not get re-elected, you can blame the map, which has a small role in it, or you can actually look at what the policies of her party have done to the country here over the last 18 months with 40-year highs on inflation. And by the way, for the first time ever, every state in America is averaging at least $4 a gallon in gas. I saw this tweet yesterday from Roger Marshall, Kansas U.S. Senator. And according to AAA, Kansas actually has the cheapest gas in the country, .. at $4.03 a gallon. $4.03 a gallon. So there's going to be a lot of finger pointing. And there's no doubt that Amanda Atkins is in a very good place. You know, she is the obviously person that is anticipated to be the Republican nominee in the 3rd District. She is in a very good place to be the next congresswoman here in the 3rd District of Kansas, partially because of the map, but mostly because of what's happening right now in the country and the pain that 3rd District voters are feeling. And you know what? There were a lot of 3rd District voters. We talked to them around, 2018, 2020 election cycles who really weren't necessarily big fans of Sharice Davids, who votes with Nancy Pelosi 95%+ of the time. But they were just mostly like, Trump's a goober. That was mostly their attitude. And they said, you know what? We're going to take it out on the local congressional Republican candidate, that being Kevin Yoder and then Sharice Davids. And we're going to vote Kevin Yoder and then Amanda Atkins. And we're going to vote for Sharice Davids. And that's what they did. And now I think there's going to be a big shift back the other way. It makes sense. It happens in politics all the time. People make mistakes. And the mistake of putting these folks in power for the last 18 months have cost Americans thousands and thousands of dollars. Just a fact. So there's going to be a lot of blaming going around, a lot of finger pointing. Sharice can't win. Oh my gosh, the map's gerrymandered. Supreme Court didn't do the right thing. There's going to be a lot of that. But don't let that overshadow the reality that even if the old map stood, or, even if there was some map that maybe was more suited to Sharice Davids, whatever you want to call it, it was going to be an uphill battle because of what she has voted for and what her party has done here over the last 18 months to Americans' pocketbooks. That's just the facts. 5767710. We're on the text line as we always are, which is 816-576-7710. Don't forget, our Politics in a Pint is now officially announced. It's with Missouri Congressman and U.S. Senate candidate Billy Long. We are going to be up in the Northland at T-Shots. It's like a Topgolf, but it's up there in the Northland. Don't worry, we're not playing golf. We got a private room up there for a couple of hundred folks, and we look forward to seeing you up there. If you want to RSVP right now, go to kcmotalkradio.com. We have a busy show, by the way, we'll tell you about coming up. And one of our guests, of course, is the mayor, Quentin Lucas, joins us on Thursday morning. The Kansas City Star lit him up. Yeah, they lit him up. We'll tell you what they said and why next here on KCMO. So did Quentin Lucas get outmaneuvered at every turn? That's what the Kansas City Star is writing about him after this latest kerfuffle with the Missouri legislature and KCPD funding. So this came down late last week, and we've been covering it throughout the week here on KCMO. And that is the fact that right as the legislative session was ending in Jefferson City last week, the Missouri Senate passed a bill. And this bill required Kansas City to fund the police department to the tune of 25% of their budget instead of the previously allocated 20% of their budget. Now, Kansas City was already at the 25% threshold in terms of what they were given to KCPD, but this required that number to stay at 25% in all future years. It will now go to a ballot, go to a vote of the Missouri people that is expected to pass after Governor Parsons signs it, and that will be that. So this all ties back to 1 year ago this month. Remember, that is when the mayor of Kansas City, Quentin Lucas, and eight city council members agreed in the dark of night, without any knowledge to the four Northland council members, without any knowledge to the Board of Police Commissioners, they agreed to divert $42.5 million from KCPD's budget into a community services and prevention fund that was designed to take a more global approach to the city's violent crime problem. Gosh, it sounds like it's written by a college professor, doesn't it? A more global approach to the city. Yes, because taking cops off the streets and giving it into made-up community services and prevention funds will definitely do the trick. Brilliant! Absolutely brilliant, I tell you. So that backfired on him. It backfired on him in a big way. Jackson County judge said, nope, can't do that. Nope, nope, nope. What then happened? The mayor and the city did not appeal that ruling. They didn't do it. And then what happened is the Missouri legislature, led by local state senator for Platt and Buchanan counties, Tony Lukemire, said, yeah, you're not pulling this stunt again. We are now going to force the city, require the city to increase its spend, its minimum spend for KCPD. And while that bill was on the rocks, depending on, you know, what time it was in the legislative cycle, ultimately they got it done and it goes to the governor's desk. And what the Kansas City Star wrote here in this piece, and I was shocked by this. They say, headline, Mayor Lucas's plan to control KCPD spending has been a spectacular, dangerous disaster. Now, not for the reasons that you think. They say here that they were obviously very sympathetic to the mayor and what he attempted to do. They obviously are no fans of the Board of Police Commissioners. They want, you know, these lightweights at City Hall, and I mean that top to bottom. I mean, some of these council members, my goodness, you wouldn't elect them dog catcher. And they're sitting on the Kansas City, Missouri City Council. I mean, it is, lightweight is the nicest word I can think of. But anyway, the Star writes that it was obviously sympathetic to this idea, but they also said about Mayor Lucas, Mayor Lucas is the latest example of failure. A year ago, we urged him to pursue an all-hands approach to resisting legislative meddling in the issue. Instead, the city was outmaneuvered by the FOP at every level. They add, we'll know in a year if Lucas pays a political price for this self-imposed blunder. Now, here's where I got to give the Star a hard time. What they're basically saying is, we like what he did, but then he got outmaneuvered. Okay, so tell us what he could have done differently. You said he got outmaneuvered, but you never, at any point in this article, told us what he could have done differently to avoid getting outmaneuvered. He made what he thought was a slick political move. I obviously disagreed with it. At the time, we go back 12 months now, I disagreed with it. But explain to me what exactly he could have done differently to avoid, as the star writes, getting outmaneuvered, John. I can't quite figure that part out.
Well, a response I would get to things like that would be, oh, there's thousands of them, you know, don't even make me say, I don't even have time to go into it.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes. When people do that whole thing.
For one fact, just one.
Yes.
Ouch.
Yes.
You know, there's a list. I mean, come on. Yeah. I don't even have time for this.
I don't have time for you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny when you get into those arguments. All right, what do you want to do differently? You know, the thing. Jeez. So that's the part where I've got to say, okay, listen, I totally disagree with how Lucas went about doing this, and he lost in court, and then the Missouri legislature made the city pay for it. And by the way, they're making them pay for it in something they're already doing, which is funding the police department with 25% of their budget. But if you're going to knock the guy and say he got outmaneuvered, you got to say what he could have done differently to not get outmaneuvered. And of course, they don't do that. But then they cheer him on the whole way, and they cheered him on the whole way. The whole time the star was going, yeah, go Quentin! And now he gets his butt kicked, and they're like, boy, he got outmaneuvered. You can't have it both ways there, guys. You just can't. Coming up next, this is a stunning story, and it does not make Missouri U.S. Senator Roy Blunt look good. I'll explain why coming up. We're approaching the end of the week on KCMO Talk Radio. Happy Thursday. Got a busy show. We have Derek Schmidt, who's going to be joining us top of this hour, Kansas Attorney General. He was obviously playing a big role in these new congressional maps that got approved by the Kansas Supreme Court yesterday. So we'll talk to him about that. Mayor Lucas will be here 1 hour from now. We got Charlie Gasparino of Fox Business Network at 8, and then Scott Schwab, Kansas Secretary of State, just after 9. So a listener, Chris, sent me this story yesterday from the Washington Free Beacon, and it does not make outgoing Missouri U.S. Senator Roy Blunt look good at all. And I'm just going to I usually wouldn't do something like this where I would share and just read a story to you. But when I saw it yesterday, it was the first time I had seen it. So I just want to read you the story, share it with you, and then we can obviously get your reaction as well at 576-7710. The text line is 816-576-7710. Here's the headline: how a Republican senator's son partnered with a liberal dark money group to sink voter ID expansion. A George Soros-linked dark money behemoth has a peculiar partner in its bid to sink voter ID expansion in Michigan. A group of Republican operatives led by a sitting Republican senator's son. Over the past year, liberal dark money group 1630 Fund has spent $2.5 million opposing a Republican-led petition drive to expand Michigan's voter ID requirements. Nearly $400,000 of that money has gone to ground game political solutions. So this liberal dark money group that spent $2.5 million opposing Michigan's attempt to tighten up its voter ID requirements, they have spent $400,000 with a group called Ground Game Political Solutions. It's a consulting firm that a trio of Republican operatives privately launched in May of 2021. Who are they? And who do they include? Our own Missouri U.S. Senator Roy Blunt and his son Andy Blunt. The firm, which Blunt first registered in Delaware before expanding it to 10 other states, functions as a stealthy subsidiary to Blunt's public-facing canvassing company, HBS Plus. The setup has allowed Blunt and his partners, fellow Republican operatives, Greg Hartley and Megan Cox, to rake in hundreds of thousands of dollars from deep-pocketed liberals without alienating their conservative clients. The revelation shows just how far some liberal operatives are willing to go to tank the ongoing voter ID expansion effort in Michigan. In at least one case, for example, the 1630 Fund used its Republican allies at Ground Game to pay canvassers tens of thousands of dollars to not work on the issue. So here, this report says that the George Soros-linked fund was paying the Blunt family operation to then pay canvassers money to not go around the state of Michigan and work on the issue to try to get a petition drive going to tighten up voter ID. This is really concerning stuff. The ploy saw Ground Game reach a November agreement with a Michigan petitioner gatherer, a Michigan petition gatherer, that paid him $50,000 to not work any election reform issue. Cox personally signed the contract, which the petition gatherer called a scheme to pay off circulators not to engage in voter ID initiative. So they were paying these people to not do what they said they were going to do, and that's go petition around the state to try to get voter ID laws tightened up. Just one day before Cox sealed the deal, Ground Game received a $56,000 payment from another political action committee, Protect Michigan Vote, that the 1630 Fund bankrolls to fight voter ID in Michigan. According to a campaign finance disclosure, that payment went to Ground Game through a Jefferson City, Missouri address registered to Blunt's consulting firm, Hush Blackwell Strategies. Blunt, Hartley, and Cox did not return multiple requests for comment. All three obviously have close ties to Roy Blunt, our outgoing U.S. Senator. This is one of those stories and one of those reports that makes you shake your head and wonder why. I know money drives a lot of people to do a lot of things. Oftentimes things maybe they don't genuinely believe in or disagree with. But considering voter ID is one of those issues and one of those things that it seems like Republicans, conservatives, many independents, by the way, are on board with, and want to see tightened up and want to see cleaned up, and their opponents are the ones that say, if you are in favor of voter ID, what are you? Take a guess. What are you if you're against voter ID? You know the word. Starts with an R,
racist.
John. Say it together.
Racist.
Yes, racist. It would seem to me having consulting firms with ties to Roy Blunt and his son are bad ideas. Right? There's plenty of Democrat firms out there that I'm sure would take this business. Why would a firm tied to Roy Blunt want to take this business? Why? If they genuinely are about traditional conservative causes, why would they take this business from this firm? The article from the Washington Free Beacon goes on to say, just 13 days after the launch, business records show Blunt, Hartley, and Cox registered Ground Game Political Solutions in Delaware. The operatives used a corporate compliance company to do so, which allowed them to keep their names off of the filing and personally distance themselves from Ground Game. But Blunt, Hartley, and Cox went on to register Ground Game in 10 more states, some of which require filers to disclose more information about a company's leader. In Florida and Texas, for example, Ground Game's filing names Blunt, Hartley, and Cox as directors and lists the Missouri address the firm used to accept hundreds of thousands of dollars from the group Protect Michigan Vote. Similar filings in Nevada and North Carolina also name those three operatives and refer back to Ground Game's original Delaware registration. So here you've got this company being run by Roy Blunt's son that has accepted hundreds of thousands of dollars, according to this report from the Washington Free Beacon, from an organization and organizations with deep ties to George Soros to try to make sure that Michigan does not tighten up its voter ID requirements. It is the definition of swampy in so many ways. The definition of it. And the fact that Blunt's office has not responded to it is concerning. I will reach out, and I have a good relationship with the senator. He's been coming on the show for the years I've been here. He's coming to the studio. I have a good relationship with his staff. They're all really good people. I enjoy them personally and professionally. But I've got to find out what the heck is going on with this. And you know, even if the senator says, I don't know anything about it, I have nothing to do with it, you know, what my son does is not my business, it still is just a bad look top to bottom. The bad, bad look top to bottom. So we'll get to more of this coming up on KCMO Talk Radio. And we're at 576-7710. The text line is 816-576-7710. As we roll through the 6 o'clock hour on a busy Thursday morning on KCMO, top of the hour, Derek Schmidt is going to be joining us, the Kansas Attorney General. Of course, he's running for governor as well. Next, we'll get to your calls, but also I got to lighten the mood a little bit, all right? Just a little bit. See, this kid ordered 31 cheeseburgers. 31 cheeseburgers on his parents' phone. Whoopsie-daisy. We'll get to that and more coming up on KCMO Talk Radio. I wish I could answer this one on the text line. This is why I love the text line. Pete, gas $4.15 a gallon this morning. When is this bleep going to stop? I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to... I wish I could answer that question. Maybe you come to the Kansas side. From what I hear, it's a little bit cheaper. I was downtown the other day. I don't know who this gas station owner is. Just downtown. And it was $4.59. I have not seen a number that high in this area. In fact, generally what I've seen is 40, 50 cents lower than that. But I'm looking at this thing. I'm saying $4.59 a gallon in downtown Kansas City, Missouri. Are you kidding me? My, Joe's got, they have no stinking idea what to do. They are clueless on this. Absolutely clueless. Outside of telling you to go buy an electric car, by golly. Yeah, I mean, you know, you're getting hurt by the extra $2 a gallon, John, but you can go buy a $50,000 Tesla, can't you?
You're kind of out there on an island in this downtown gas station, right?
Oh, well, that too.
Right.
I think this guy's just looking for a sucker.
Keep talking.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right.
Because the bridge is out, right? You're not getting across the Buck O'Neill Bridge very fast to somewhere.
No. I mean, it was right off of, I was going down to the Union Station area, and it was getting right off, what would that exit be before Broadway going downtown? There's always a homeless guy there on the left side. You swing a right. You got Town Topic on the left. I don't know. I'm blanking on the exit there.
It might be Southwest Boulevard.
Yeah, it would have been Southwest. Yep. That would have been it. I mean, I've been seeing the same homeless guy there forever. I hope he seems to be doing all right. He's probably cleaning up. He hasn't moved. But anyway, there's a gas station there on the right side. And gosh, $4.59. I'm like, do you find any suckers at $4.59? In a month, that might look like a steal, by the way. You see J.P. Morgan yesterday? They predicted $6 a gallon gas by August. $6 a gallon. It's crazy.
I tried to get gas there once. This was probably a decade ago.
And you talking about that same station?
Yeah. It took me about 20 minutes to fill up. That's how slow the gas came out there. So I never went back. Now the price is terrible.
Yeah.
Oh. So they're charging you by the hour to fill up, I guess.
Yeah. I have filled up there once. I think it was when I was living downtown. I was pretty darn desperate. And I seem to remember that as well, Mark. I seem to remember that as well, where I got off there and I got gas at that station on the right side there. And it's not like an Exxon. I forget what it is. And it's like, boy, this thing, I got another 15 minutes to go until this thing gets full. It's barely moving. It's barely budging. It's like tick, 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 tick. I mean, it is embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing.
I don't know why. That just really annoys me when that happens at gas stations.
You know what? That is a great pet peeve, and I'm totally on board with that. Especially now, because I just want to get in and out as quick as I can. I don't even want to look at the top number, right? I just want to look at the bottom, the gallon number, wait for it to click and know it's full, and then close my eyes, put it back in, and then close my gas cap and go on with my day. I don't want to see the number. I don't. I mean, my goodness, I'm going down to Tulsa Friday and the Saturday for the PGA Championship this weekend. I never thought I'd have to take out a loan just to get myself down there on a four-hour drive. I don't even want to know what that gas bill is going to look like to and from. It's horrible, absolutely horrible. But don't worry. If Sharice Davids loses her reelection bid, it's going to be because of racist Republican gerrymandering, not because her party has totally sent the country into hell in a handbasket. Okay, on a lighter note to end the hour, a 2-year-old Now, I have a 3-year-old. I can't imagine her doing this. And I have a 1-year-old. I definitely can't imagine her doing this. But a 2-year-old, according to this story, in Texas, ordered 31 cheeseburgers on DoorDash after taking his mother's phone. Yes, Texas mom Kelsey Burkhart Golden was in for a, shall we say, cheesy surprise. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Ah, that was so corny. When her toddler sneakily took her phone and ordered 31 cheeseburgers from McDonald's. 2-year-old Barrett grabbed his mom's cell phone to play some digital games. But, by the way, why do you give your 2-year-old your phone to play games on? We don't give our 3-year-old the phone. I mean, I'm not against watching TV shows. I'm not, you know, one of these no electronics ever kind of people. But giving your 2-year-old a phone to play games on, I'm going to...
Oh, Pete, what could happen?
What could go wrong? He's going to order 31 cheeseburgers or something?
Luckily, it wasn't 310, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
He was just trying to help out our boy, DJT.
We have pizzas. We have 300 hamburgers. Many, many french fries.
At 31, he's only 10% of the way there to Trump's 300 hamburgers. All right? He's got some room to go. So the mother took to Facebook and said that she has 31 free cheeseburgers from McDonald's if anyone's interested because her 2-year-old figured out how to order them on DoorDash. Alongside the post, the mom shared a snap of Barrett, the son, sitting on a table, munching on a cheeseburger next to a mountain of yellow paper-wrapped McDonald's goodies next to him. The total bill for the extra lunchtime sandwiches was $91.70, including a $16 tip for the DoorDash driver who had to make the trek to her house. Golden went on to elaborate on the moment, explaining she had been using her computer when her son took her mobile device. She didn't think anything of it, believing that he would just be fiddling around with the camera. All right, this lady, I mean, gosh, what a moron. What an absolute, I say this as the father of 2 toddlers, you are an idiot, lady, all right? You're an absolute idiot. Hey, you're just going to, like, turn on the phone and use the camera, maybe. He usually likes to take pictures of himself, so he was doing that. I thought I'd lock the phone, but apparently I didn't because the DoorDash came with 31 cheeseburgers. I didn't know what to do with them. He only ate half of one, so I posted on a community page on Facebook and asked anyone if they wanted to come over and eat some cheeseburgers. Wow. Mother and neighbor of the year, all in one.
I'm impressed the kid tipped.
Yeah. That's a pretty good tip, too. That's a pretty darn good tip. I mean, the kids got it all buttoned up. What, $16 on 90? That's about 18%, give or take. Takes care of the people. I like this kid. You know, he tips better than half the people I know. My goodness gracious. So good for him. Golden also said she was hoping nearby friends would come to pick up a free cheeseburger. Quote, there's somebody coming in 10 minutes to pick some up, but I don't know how many he wants. I would also want to know how much pot he smoked before he comes over and scoops up 12 cheeseburgers from you. All right? Just a thought there as well you should consider.
Are they calling this kid the cheeseburglar?
They should. They should. Oh, gosh. Happy Thursday. We're making it to the weekend. Hey, RSVP for that Politics in a Pint. We're going to be with Billy Long, Missouri congressman running for U.S. Senate. Tee shots up in the Northland. That is coming up on Wednesday, June 1st. RSVP at kcmotalkradio.com. Coming up next, Derek Schmidt, the Kansas Attorney General. He is, of course, running for governor as well. He's going to join us after yesterday's huge decision by the Kansas Supreme Court that upholds the congressional maps. He was involved with that. He'll talk about it next. Well, they finally covered it. We had to force them to cover it, but they did. But, of course, how they covered it was so predictable. Happy Thursday. Mayor Lucas joins us in 15 minutes. So the protest at Lee's Summit that turned ugly happened a couple of days ago, and we've been following this story. We broke this story, actually, last week, and that is the story of the Lee's Summit students trying to start a Turning Point USA chapter. It's a conservative, young conservative organization, and they wanted to start their own chapter at Lee's Summit West. So they're still in the exploratory phase, according to the school, who I've been speaking with as well this week. And they had their first inaugural meeting here the other day. And during that meeting, there was like 10, 12 students that wanted to be a part of the group. But hundreds of people showed up to protest. And this came after days and days of harassment and threats and pulling down their flyers around school and everything else. Because we, by golly, Turning Point USA is, what's the word?
Racist.
Yes. We're all catching on here. Well done, gentlemen. Well done. How about a round of applause for you guys? Catching on fast. We've got quick learners here at KCMO. So, Turning Point USA called a national right-wing organization racist. They get told that they could explore the idea of a group, but they've got to have at least one teacher sponsor. So as these protests were building before the meeting 2 days ago, which took place, would have been Tuesday at 10 o'clock in the morning, these teachers, from what I heard, backed out of being the sponsor because it was too controversial. Suddenly, they didn't want to be involved and caught up in the controversy of the moment. So they backed out. And then as the meeting is taking place, in the middle of the meeting, one of these student protesters comes in and flips a glass table. The glass shatters everywhere. You can see the photo up on my Facebook and Twitter page if you want to look at it there. And the whole thing was then shut down and everything else. So the Kansas City Star finally wrote something about this. But of course, here's the spin. A protest erupted at Lee's Summit West on Tuesday as some students worked to establish a local chapter of Turning Point USA, a national right-wing organization that promotes conservative policies on school campuses. You think they'd do that with, let's say, fill in your blank left-wing organization? You think they'd say a national left-wing organization? You think they'd do that? No. Of course not. A few students have approached administration about starting a chapter in school, according to district spokeswoman Katie Bergen. They met in the library on Tuesday to discuss forming the group. And in response, hundreds of students protested, holding LGBTQ flags and Black Lives Matter signs. Many students filled the library to protest, while hundreds more protested outside in the courtyard. Protesters said they were worried about having the group at school, arguing the national organization espouses racist and anti-LGBTQ concepts. You see, everything that you don't like, that they don't like, you just call it racist or anti-LGBTQ, and away you go. Even though one of the most prominent members of Turning Point USA is Candace Owens, a Black woman. There are gay members of Turning Point USA at the national level. But don't worry, if you just say everything is racist or everything is anti-LGBTQ, and I think they forgot like five letters and numbers there, you're good, and no one questions it. Student Azriel Holden told the Kansas City Star, "I joined the protest because I knew it'd be even more unsafe for minorities if this was going to happen, and I can't stand watching my classmates fear for their lives." Yep, Turning Point USA. They're going to be running around trying to kill people, I guess, around school or something like that. If people are going to have to fear for their lives.
Extracurricular.
True. They'll chase people around after school.
After school.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Good point there, John. With the large crowd protesting, the meeting was cut short. As the meeting grew heated and ended prematurely, someone flipped over a glass table in the library, causing it to shatter. Turning Point founder Charlie Kirk posted on social media that insane leftist disrupted the meeting and smashed the table. But Bergen told the Star, the table has been framed by some as a group action that was part of a protest plan. But in reality, it was the poor decision of an individual as the meeting was wrapping up. Well, maybe they're referring to how I framed it. I didn't say it was necessarily some big plan of the protesters. But guess what? When you have unruly protests taking place and not enough administration involved, things like that can happen when things spiral and get out of control. It's your job as a school and as an administration to do everything you can to make sure something like that isn't happening, especially when you know there are hundreds of people there to protest about 12 students trying to form a group the size of the local chess club. Relax and do what you have to do to make sure the 12 students feel safe. That's the job of the school.
That occurred to me. Thank you. I appreciate you voicing that.
I mean, these people, unbelievable.
It's not like they didn't know it was going to happen.
No, they knew it was happening.
People said, we're coming to protest.
Exactly. You get your school resource officer, you get everybody out there so that one individual doesn't do something like this. That's what you do if you're the principal there, Herzog, or anybody else involved in the administration. Be an adult. You've got hundreds of kids going up against like a dozen kids, a dozen children. These are minors trying to simply start a group that has conservative values. And this is how they get treated. And you stand there and say, well, you know, just one kid accidentally flipped over a table. Everyone went back to class. It was A-okay. I don't know. Watch the video for yourself. It was getting pretty hot and heavy there for a little bit. But they want to sweep this thing under the rug. No big deal. It's A-okay. It's going to be fine. And plus, they're conservatives anyway. So, you know, who cares? Oh, it's not a big deal.
Probably Christians.
Yeah.
Talk about a bombshell.
Oh, gosh. And then from there, the predictable piece in the garbage outlet, the Kansas City Star by Sarah Ritter, goes on to spend the next 6 to 12 paragraphs trashing Turning Point USA and calling it basically a racist organization. So predictable. Saw it coming from a mile away. That's what they went on to do. I mean, Sarah Ritter is the activist masking as an education reporter at the Kansas City Star. She's the one who tried to trash all the local folks running in Blue Valley and Olathe for school board, then also wanted to, you know, go down the same road with some of the Missouri school board races. Very, very, very predictable. Top to bottom. 5767710. The text line is 816-576-7710. So that's the Star covering the Lee Summit West story. I mean, you could see how it was going to be covered from a mile away. So, so predictable. We also have to tell you later in the show that there is a school board meeting tonight, and people are being encouraged to go to that as well and show their support for these students at Lee Summit West. That takes place tonight. Coming up next, the mayor of Kansas City, Quinton Lucas, joins us on KCMO. Oh, man, oh, man. This Lee Summit story. By the way, I want to note this as well for those of you who are in the Lee Summit area or a Lee Summit resident. They have a school board meeting that is taking place tonight. Tonight, it is taking place. And just looking for support. No one's looking for any confrontations, anything like that. But you know, at the Lee Summit School Board tonight, there's going to be plenty of protesters, plenty of people saying why the Turning Point USA groups, for some reason, cannot exist at Lee Summit West. But that's all nonsense. It's all nonsense, but they're going to be out in full force. I don't think they have a leg to stand on in terms of the actual like bylaws of the district. I'm reading them here. Someone sent them to me recently. It said, student-initiated non-curricular groups will not be denied access on the basis of religious, political, philosophical, or other content of speech at such meetings or activities. But just showing your support tonight at the school board meeting would be beneficial. 7 p.m. tonight, 301 Northeast Tudor Road in Lee Summit is when that takes place. All right? 5767710. The text line is 816-576-7710. Let's go to Leonard. He is in Kansas City. Hello, Leonard. Good morning.
Hey, Pete. I want you to know I will no longer be calling up your show and expressing my white privilege. I have been woke today.
Oh.
And yeah.
What turned you woke?
Well, you know, and I wish the mayor could hear this. I hope he's listening. You know, the Kansas City Star, if they're printing their newspaper in Iowa, that's 7% less of African Americans there. Then I think we need to shut the border down between Missouri and Iowa if they're going to be doing that. I just will not take it anymore.
Okay. So the Kansas City Star is getting whiter, you're saying, by printing out of Des Moines.
Well, and to me, to your point there, it's like, why would we be putting our dollars there? When we should have them here in Missouri.
Well, because they don't have any money, because they're broke, because no one reads the garbage. That's why. I mean, they're lucky they got any. They're lucky they're not, you know, going to a local high school asking to borrow the copy machine to print the paper every day.
That is true. And in closing here, real quick, you know, I'm kind of going to go back, but in terms of, like, if you're liberal and, quote unquote, if you don't call somebody a racist in your life, you will mourn later. Mm. It will be a problem.
Okay. Let's go to Irwin and Lee Summit. Hello, Irwin. Good morning.
Hey, Pete, thanks for having me. You know, I'm amazed at how far off the Kansas City Star can be on the facts. They just did an article on one of the candidates dropping out of the 4th Congressional District of Congress.
Yeah.
And they named me and they said, I'm a retired pastor. Come on, I'm a retired Navy SEAL captain and a police officer. Words have meaning. They ought to get the facts right. You know, this half spin, they call that being a sea lawyer in the Navy. I wish they'd check their facts before they start printing stuff.
Yeah, no, I know. You're right about that. I completely agree. I mean, but that's nothing new for the Kansas City Star. It's not. Victor in Parkville is on KCMO. Go ahead, Vic.
Good morning, Pete. Well, you know, first off, I'd like to say that I and some of my friends are looking forward to seeing you all up here on the 1st. For your politics and a pint.
So. Yeah, we'll see you up there, Vic. That's the furthest north you've ever been up there at T-Shots. I got a minute, though, my man, so let it rip.
Okay. Anyway, you know what? I was talking about this Turning Point USA Lee Summit, and I think that these students and Candace Owens, as a prominent member of the organization, should contact the Missouri Attorney General and petition the State Attorney General that their civil rights have been violated.
Yeah, you know what?
Absolutely ridiculous.
I agree, Victor. I think that's a great next step and an excellent point. I have been working many back channels to try to get to Charlie Kirk and Candace Owens on this issue in particular. We're making some progress on that, and we're going to make sure that, especially if for some reason this group gets rejected, they're going to be heard from, put it that way. Charlie Gasparino, Fox Business. Terrible day for the markets yesterday. Looking bad again today. He'll join us on that and more coming up. What a brutal poll this is. I mean, we just got done talking with Charlie Gasparino, Fox Business Network, about the economy, the markets, set to open up here in 5 minutes. Another negative day, at least to start the day, appears to be on the horizon. So here's some new polling that came down. And, I mean, this is as bad, if not worse, than I would have expected. Comes from Quinnipiac, you know, one of the big national pollsters and whatnot. You see them all the time. And here's what this shows. And I want to look at a specific group in particular, right? Polling on Hispanic voters. The question reads as follows. Do you approve or disapprove of the way Joe Biden is handling his job as president? Hispanic voters. 10% strongly approve of the way Joe Biden is handling his job as president. 16% of Hispanic voters somewhat approve. 16% somewhat disapprove. And 43% of Hispanic voters, who Democrats just believe are going to run into their arms because they're like an open borders party or something like that.
Oh, and change your group name, too.
Oh, yeah, and they call them Latinx, right? Mark keeps telling me it's Latinx, but I think Latinx has a much better sound to it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not playing this game, so I'm setting it out.
Latinx sounds like a wild animal.
It does. I mean, you know what? Never mind. I won't go there.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, Latinx has a better sound to me than Latinx. You know, the Latinx.
Fits that Marvel Comics thing like Ultra Mega, though.
Yeah, that's right. It does. So despite the fact that the Democratic Party views itself as the party of open borders, which they assume all Latinos love, and, you know, they call them Latinx, they're amazingly really not fans of what is happening right now. I mean, who would have ever seen that coming?
Talk about a bombshell.
43% of Hispanic voters in this Quinnipiac poll strongly disapprove of the job that Joe Biden's doing as president. Now, compare that to white Americans who at 54% disapprove strongly. And for black Americans, it's 12% who disapprove strongly. By the way, of those who approve strongly of how good a job Joe Biden is doing, Hispanics, only 10% of them approve strongly, which is less than white people, 15% of them approve strongly. That's the wokest of all wokesters. And then for Black Americans, it's 37% who approve strongly. So the fewest percentage of Hispanic voters of any racial makeup in this poll approve strongly of the job Joe Biden is doing. This has got to be the alarm bells have got to be ringing all over the DNC. Now, also in this poll of Hispanic, of all voters, but broken down into Hispanic voters, 66% of Hispanic voters disapprove of the way Democrats in Congress are handling their job. So this just keeps getting worse. This keeps getting worse. And then if the election were today, would you want to see a Republican Party or the Democratic Party win control of the United States House of Representatives? Hispanic voters, 46% want a Republican, 34% want a Democrat. That's a 12-point margin in favor of the Republican Party for Hispanic voters in this country. That is absolutely awful. Awful for them. For white voters, 55% Republican, 37% Democrat. For Black voters, 8% Republican, 75% Democrat. But think about that Hispanic number. I mean, that is as brutal as anything you could have. And last but not least, 78% of Hispanic voters are dissatisfied with the way things are going in this nation. Woo! That is as bad as it gets. 78% are dissatisfied. Yet they genuinely believe that the way to turn this thing around is to, first off, why do you think they're going so hard at this white supremacist thing, right? Why do you think they're playing up this idea that if you are against mass illegal immigration and an unfiltered border, you're basically the guy that walked into a grocery store in Buffalo and shot up black people? Why do you think they're trying to tie these things together? Because they're seeing their numbers fall off a cliff, notably with Hispanic voters. So the name of the game here is to don't actually look at what's happening in the economy. Don't look at what's happening. Instead, we just want to remind you that if you vote Republican or even think about voting Republican, you may as well be a white supremacist. I mean, that's the name of the game. News in a minute. We're back with you here momentarily on the price of gasoline. It's out of control. It could go to six. We'll get to it coming up. Happy Thursday. It's great to be here on KCMO Talk Radio. Good day all around, by the way. Gosh, there's been a lot of wins as of late. You know, you got the Kansas congressional map. Supreme Court says that's going to go forward. You got the KCPD funding thing last week as well. That was a big win, a late win in Jeff City. I don't know about you. Are you getting sick of all the winning? Because I'm not. I am not. Now, the thing that is obviously top of people's minds, these gas prices. For the first time ever, every state in America is on average over $4 a gallon for gasoline, John.
Cost me $20 to fill up the lawnmower.
Yeah, you know, right? Seriously. I mean, my goodness. Jeez. May as well, you know, I like mowing the lawn, although every year I get less and less into mowing the lawn. It seems to just come with time. But I like it. You know, it takes me 45 minutes to an hour and, you know, just kind of get it all done.
You're there with your thoughts.
Exactly. You're right there with your thoughts. Listen to the, you know, station or listen to some music on my headphones, whatever it might be. But now I may as well just pay somebody to do it, because by the time I get done filling everything up and paying myself to mow the lawn, it's probably not that much of a difference. Just save myself the time and the headache and the sweat. But anyway, you know, the question is, where are we going on the issue of gas prices, right? How bad is it going to get? How ugly is it going to get? Well, a new article, a new study here, I don't know if study is the right word, but a report from J.P. Morgan says that we could be heading for $6 a gallon gas. You just heard at the bottom of the hour on the news that there are some gas stations, I assume this is mostly in California, who are having to refinagle their billboard, you know, their gas billboard, so they can fit in double-digit price for a gallon of gas. They can fit in $10 a gallon of gasoline. They're having to redo their big digital board so they could fit in a double-digit number. That's how bad things are getting. So, yeah, J.P. Morgan. New report from them says prices could surge another 37% by August, hitting $6.20 per gallon on a national average. This is due to expectations of a strong driving demand throughout the summer driving season. That's Memorial Day until Labor Day. And, I mean, could you imagine sitting here in Kansas and Missouri and dealing with $6.50 a gallon gasoline? And what is that going to do to the larger economy? I mean, forget whether or not you're going to cancel a summer drive away, a summer getaway, or maybe you'll stay more local than you would have otherwise. What does that do to the airline market? The cost of airline tickets? What does that do to just the cost of goods and services that you buy every day, right? Whether it's food at the grocery store, that's got to come from somewhere. It's got to get there to your grocery store. Regardless of how it gets there, it's using gasoline to get there. What does it do to just retail things you buy at Target or Walmart or wherever you go? It's only going to increase the cost of literally everything in our lives if we get to $6.20 per gallon. The analysts cautioned at J.P. Morgan gasoline balances on the East Coast have even been tighter, drawing to their lowest levels since 2011. Earlier this week, Los Angeles became the second metro, joining San Francisco, with the average cost for a gallon of gasoline past $6 per gallon. And as I noted, for the first time ever, the average cost for a gallon of gasoline surpassed $4 in all 50 states, driven by the high cost of oil, according to AAA. So, and where was I? I was driving down, I guess I got off the Southwest Boulevard exit, and there's a gas station right there on the right side. That was $4.59 the other day. And I'm trying to think of what brand it was. The dinosaur brand, the green dinosaur brand. Someone's got to text in on the green dinosaur brand of gasoline. What is that? Just 816-576-7710. Why am I blanking on the green dinosaur
brand? Sinclair.
Yes. Thank you, John. Thank you.
Such a nice man.
Well done there, sir. Thank you very much.
He's like old.
Yeah. Sinclair. That's what it was. $4.59 a gallon in downtown Kansas City, Missouri. Now, Mark was bragging during the commercial break. He was only paying He got $3.97 at a Quick Trip. Don't tell anyone where it was, all right? I don't want everyone going there, and then they're going to drive up the price of gas, and you're not going to have your $3.97 a gallon gas anymore.
Yeah, I felt I was stealing. It was under $4.
Mark almost gave up. He almost gave up the location. You can't be doing that, man. You can't.
And I actually filled up the whole thing. It wasn't just halfway this time.
Ooh,
so.
You went the whole way.
It was a little more pricey than I'm used to. But
what it cost you to go the whole way, Mark?
It was, for the car that I had, it was like 90-something, which it's our bigger car, but still.
$97 to fill up the tank, man. This is absolutely crazy. So what's the White House saying about this? What's their pitch going to be to the American people? Karine Jean-Pierre. Here we go. New White House press secretary.
And final question on gas prices. Americans are now spending $5,000 a year on gasoline. That's almost double what they did a year ago. Where are people supposed to go to get all that extra cash?
To get the extra cash to pay for gas?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the things that we've been very clear about is to do everything in our power to make sure that we lower cost. You know, it is important. We see it. The president understands what the American people is going through.
What? Joe Biden understands what the American people are going through. Is Joe filling up Air Force One on a regular basis? I mean, something tells me that's probably not happening. He understands, and they're doing everything in their power. What would that consist of outside of using reserves that are meant for national emergencies to try to increase the supply instead of just, you know, cutting the red tape and being more friendly, shall we say, to oil and gas drilling at a time of intense need? You could cool off inflation by November by simply doing that. It'll take some time to catch up, but you could do it. They're not able to do it, though. They're not interested in doing it, John.
Well, you know, when Joe Biden says he can taste it at the pump, it's because he's siphoning the gas.
That's right. Oh, gosh.
Filling up the limo off the air.
Yeah. Jeez. Here was part two, by the way. They're still going to go down this road. All right. I mean, as gas prices keep getting worse, who do you go to? Who do you blame? Do we go back to the well? First, it was greed. Then it was not really happening. Then it was Putin. Then it was corporate greed again. And now we're back to our old buddy Vlad.
So the president announces on March 31st that he's got all these steps to lower gas prices, and it's still Putin's fault 7 weeks later.
Well, because what I'm saying is since the war, since Putin's war, aggression against Ukraine started back in February, we did see a spike. But before then, it had the price per gallon had fallen down about 10 cents or more. And then Putin started his aggression on Ukraine, his violent aggression on Ukraine, against their democracy, against their sovereignty. And we saw about, I mean, the facts show it went up about 60 to 70%. So it is Putin's tax hike. This is what we're talking about.
Yep. They're going back there, baby. They are going back. Not going to work out too well. It's just not. I mean, it's just not. On the text line, Pete, I've wanted high gas prices for years. It would be painful for a while, but in the long run, this would bring back small neighborhood businesses and close the big box stores. No, it wouldn't. I mean, most people are probably within a couple of miles of a big box store, and the big box store is still going to be able to take the hit on gas prices and be able to take that pain far more than the small business guy. I believe the small business guy is more likely to get crushed by high gas prices, unless you want to live in an environment like the 1920s, where everyone lives in a small apartment and then walks everywhere they have to go, which is not America in the 21st century, nor would I want it to be America in the 21st century. I want to see small business do well, but not at the. This is not how you make it happen.
I'll just take a lime scooter over Pete or have him drone it to me.
That's right. a government-funded lime scooter. Yes. I mean, come on. That's not how you bring back small business. It's not. Text line is also 816-576-7710. Oh, boy. Scott Schwab is going to be here top of the hour. Kansas Secretary of State had some big wins during this legislative session. Coming up, though, Sharice Davids, not a good day for her yesterday, Kansas 3rd District Congresswoman. Why is that? Because the Kansas Supreme Court upheld the maps. So We've got three parting songs for Sharice Davids we got to have some fun with. We'll do it all next here on KCMO Talk Radio. So big news yesterday for the Kansas Supreme Court as they upheld the map drawn by the Republican legislature. As you know, every 10 years after the census, you got to redraw the maps, right? It's how it works. And when the census changes, population shifts happen, you've got to move your maps around. You have to move your congressional maps around. So right now, the 3rd District, which is Sharice Davids' district, is Wyandotte, Johnson, part of Miami County. Johnson County's exploded over the last 10 years. You can't keep those two counties together. You can't do it. The numbers don't work. So the new 3rd District is going to be the southern half of Wyandotte, Johnson, Miami, Franklin, and Anderson County. So let's welcome in our friends in most of Miami, Anderson, and Franklin counties to the 3rd District. Good to see you folks here. And, you know, you guys in the northern half of Wyandotte, it's all good. You're going to be in the 2nd District with Jake LaTurner now. So Supreme Court, despite the fact that the allegation was somehow that this was massive gerrymandering, racially driven, racist. Supreme Court said there's nothing unconstitutional about this. The map is being upheld, and this was a surprise to many folks. So now Sharice Davids is in a new 3rd District that, by the way, she would have won based on the numbers in 2020. So if this was truly gerrymandering, it's the worst gerrymander of all time by Republicans because they gave her a district that she would have won in 2020 anyway, John.
Yeah, it's just that's an inconvenient fact.
I know. It gets in the way.
So we're going to have you go ahead and just skip that.
Yeah, exactly right. So we got the situation now where the screamings of racism are continuing on and on and on. And now Sharice Davids is in a much more difficult predicament to get reelected. She was in a tough spot anyway. She votes with Pelosi 95% of the time. And she's part of this party that has driven massive inflation for the American people. And she can't just run against Donald Trump anymore. It just doesn't work. So she was always headed for a very difficult reelection no matter what, right? But now it gets even more difficult. In fact, I'm here right now predicting Amanda Atkins will win and win fairly comfortably Like, I'm talking 3, 4, maybe 5 points in this third district race come November when she is, and she is presumed to be, of course, the Republican nominee in the third district. So for that, since the big, bold prediction has been made, which really isn't that bold, but the big prediction's been made, I think we have three songs that we want to share with our soon-to-be outgoing congresswoman here in the 3rd District of Kansas. Mark, you got a couple of tunes lined up for us. What's first on the list? What do we have here?
Hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more.
Hit the road, Charisse. Don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hit the road, Charisse. Don't you come back no more. Hit the road, Charisse, and don't you come back no more. All right. Very good. Very good. Okay. What's that's pretty good. That's a good one there, Mark.
That's right. Hit the road, Jack.
Don't you come back. Hit the road, Charisse. Okay, that's a good one, Mark. I like that choice. What do we have next here? Outgoing, go away, goodbye songs for who I believe will be outgoing Congresswoman Charisse Davids. What is next on the list, young man? Oh, that's good. All right. That's good.
Na, 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 na.
I feel like this is one of those songs no one knows any of the words to outside of the chorus, right? Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure, because I'm like, gosh, I don't even know where the song goes from here. But this is good.
Hear that when they Comiskey Park, right? And they just play that. The White Sox play that one.
Oh, really?
Used to in the 80s. I've got a 45 with the White Sox logo for this record. Yeah.
Goodbye. All right. That's pretty good. All right. I think we got one more song for Charisse Davids, who now is in a third district race that is just, I mean, if Amanda Atkins, she's going to pull this one off, I think, by 3 to 5 points now. What's next here, Mark, as we play our goodbye songs for Charisse Day? Oh, this is good. This is good. Well done. Well done. Can't take no more. Nothing crazy about that. Nothing crazy about that. Well done. Well, excellent song choices. Excellent song choices. Boy, you're not going to be liking those new maps in that third district. Woo! Bye, bye, bye. The new congressional maps are out, and I believe it spells the end of Charisse Davids as your third district congresswoman here in Kansas. I'm Pete Mundo on KCMO. Happy Thursday morning. Scott Schwab, the Kansas Secretary of State, coming up next on some important legislation they got done this cycle on KCMO.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival.
featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.